I'm so glad we're getting to this. This is the Rambam, Hilchot Deot Perek Hey Halacha Tet. Okay, we've talked about balance, talked about walking. Now we're talking about dress. How important is what you wear?
It's the only thing that's important.
It's interesting, by the way, that you know when they invited me yesterday to this panel discussion at our Kotel. Which, by the way, what did you guys think about that? I'm just curious. Pardon?
It was very good.
It was interesting. Now, I don't know. I don't think we really got into the meat of it. My favorite moment was, so who here has studied Hilchot Deot? I love that. Okay. Just, right. Okay, but anyway. But somebody here, I'm trying to remember who it was, somebody at the beginning of the year when I happened to say, you know, I don't know why I go to high schools, people don't study Hilchot Deot. Somebody here at one point said to me, well, people study Hilchot Deot. It's just in my high school. I said, I'm telling you, people don't CC. Yeshiva Kotel. And you can't blame the yeshiva, by the way. I don't know why. People just don't study this. This is important stuff. If you do nothing else, when you go back to university and you find some guy and he says, let's learn Chavrusa, and you say to him, let's learn Hilchot Deot. And 9 out of 10 times he'll say to you, what's that? Which tells you that would be a good... Doing Chazara in this, reviewing this, like you think that I'm just sharing this because you need to share this. I need to review this. I get a tremendous amount out of reviewing this. And if I succeed in doing this every year for the next 30 years, it'll make me a better human being. Absolutely. So that's just as an azoi. But anyway, so the Rambam here gets into this interesting question. One of the things that I thought was missing yesterday, you know, it's always a dangerous thing. You don't want to set up a panel discussion. You know, like one of the people setting up the panel, when he asked me if I'd come, I said, sure, I'm happy to come. You know, it's next door. He said, you know, the problem with you guys in Kirov, because I hadn't had my discussion with him yet, so we were talking about Kirov, right? So the problem with you guys in Kirov is you're all too nice. So I didn't know quite what to do with that comment. He said, nobody gets into a good, like, we need some conflict to make it interesting, you know? So he was hoping to get a certain person who he said is a very conflicted personality. I said to him, look, I understand that. I'm not the guy to create a, you know, whatever, but I'm not so sure that that's true. I'm not sure what you accomplished by having, I once got invited to speak about the Rabbanut in Israel. Yeah, to a group out in whatever, in a youth hostel. And they were like, it was like a birthright group. I think there were like 70, 80 students. And I show up there, and they had neglected to tell me that I was representing the Orthodox rabbinate and the chief rabbinate, which I have really nothing to do with, and that one of the people on the panel, I didn't know it was a panel, was Anat Hoffman, who at the time was a Meretz, very left-wing city councilwoman. And it was the first and last time I've let myself get into a really serious public debate, because I think people enjoy a good debate, but it doesn't really accomplish anything. Because everybody goes into the debate and they have their opinions, and they want to see how the person who represents their opinion, right, sort of shtucks the other one. Like, let's see if we can get him. Like, you're either right wing or you're left wing. So let's see a good argument. It's good entertainment. And we think, you know, we could. And then you ask questions to try to trip up the other guy. There's no education in that, right? It's not a healthy way to encourage, you know, an educational process. It's much healthier when you have people and they have a specific topic and you create a dialogue and it's interesting. But one of the things that I thought was missing last night from this discussion is that there is a whole community of people, right, who actually believe that Kirov is a problem. And they don't encourage their students to get involved at all in sort of connecting with the less affiliated or less educated. And they feel that that brings you down. And only Gedolim, great rabbis who are able to withstand the temptations, are able to do this. And that's why their students are not supposed to talk to people who have those issues. And I was hoping we would get into that discussion because that's a legitimate discussion. It's an interesting question. Like if you go to University of Pennsylvania and you feel, you know what, I gained something and I have a responsibility to the Jewish community to be able to share this with people who are interested. You know, I'm not saying you have to go on a crusade across campus. So you're sitting at some Shabbat table or whatever and somebody asks a question about, I don't know, anything from, you know, how could you go study a year in an apartheid state to, you know, don't you think people who circumcise their babies are archaic and ridiculous, right? So if you feel you have what to share on the topic, so then that's a wonderful thing to do. But on the other hand, don't make the mistake of assuming that the fact that you're in that environment doesn't bring you down. It does. Like if I was at State in Gush and I was sitting and learning, you know, for 20 years and, you know, wasn't doing all the different things I'm doing, I would for sure in certain areas be on a much higher level because it brings you down. That's the nature of the beast. So how do you find that? But one of the interesting things about that community is that it's a very isolationist approach. And one of the aspects of that isolationist approach, interestingly enough, is...
How you dress.
There's no halacha. You will not find the halacha that says that a man is not allowed to wear a blue shirt. Doesn't exist. But if you go to Or Sameach, to, you know, any kolel me'asharim, you know, Matis Dorf, Bnei Brak, whatever it might be, you won't find someone sitting in a blue shirt in the Beis Medrash, no matter how great a Talmud Chacham he is. Why? And is that appropriate, or is it not appropriate? So I was hoping that the topic of sort of do we let the world impact us, do we want to impact the world, and how that affects is an interesting question. That's not exactly what the Rambam was talking here, but that's a backdrop. So bearing that in mind, because I would be interested to hear how you think that connects to this topic, let's just do this halacha. All right, so you walk into the Beis Medrash, you know, there used to be this style. I don't know what it's called, maybe you would, but like a number of years ago, it was like associated with hip-hop or rap or whatever, and people wear these pants that were too big on them.
Baggy.
Pardon?
Baggy.
Very baggy, right? Oh, it's called baggy?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, baggy. So baggy, okay. And basically, it's like 6 inches too long, and it drags on the floor, and it's falling down all the time, I guess, or whatever it might be. And you look at this, you know, person wearing these clothes, and you think, like, it must be so annoying, because he's, like, walking to keep the bottom of the pants keep getting caught under your sneakers and whatever it might be, right? And it's, like, droop along, right? And it just gives off this energy of, you know, I don't know, luchpatli. I don't care, you know? It's not about the clothes. Just, I don't care, right? Gives off this energy of maybe sloppiness, messiness, whatever it might be, right? Is there a problem with that? Like, if I had to choose between a boy wearing those pants, coming to this medrash and sitting, learning 10 hours a day, or a boy in an Oxford shirt and a pair of slacks, spending all day on the beach, right? Every day for a year, right? I would take the guy with the baggy pants and come sit and learn Torah with me. That goes without saying. But all things being equal, is there an issue with wearing sloppy, baggy pants, right? So let's see what the Rambam says, and then you'll tell me what you think, okay? Malbush Talmud Chacham. Malbush Talmud Chacham, Talmud Chacham, Malbush Na'ev Naki. A Talmud Chacham, which again, we're translating not just as a Torah scholar, but someone who's finding balance in their life, he should dress, like, you know, nicely and clean. Now, nicely is a subjective term. Clean, I think, would be an objective term, more or less. Like, I can grant you that, you know, the newly married husband, right, who's been a bachelor for 35 years and has a little stain over here on the corner that you can barely see, he thinks his shirt is clean. And his wife thinks his shirt is dirty. I can understand that there's a certain range. But, you know, there's dirty that everybody can agree is dirty, right? So we're at least talking about that. Like, you shouldn't walk out in dirty clothes. It's just not appropriate, right? Now, the Rambam's using the language of asur. This is not that you should wear nice clothes. This is, you're forbidden to walk around in stained clothing, right? Like, it happened once this year that, I mean, I know this must be hard for you to imagine, but imagine for a moment that I spilled my coffee. I know it's like a very stretch, but okay. So I spilled coffee, and it was like a big stain here, right? So, you know, so it's an interesting question. I think it was here. I think it was in Hilchos Deos, but maybe I'm wrong. Yeah, at some point this year, right? So I stained my shirt, right? So the first question is, if you stain your shirt, yeah, if you stain your shirt, can you stay in the shir? Can you sit? Like, you're 20 minutes left of Hilchos Deos. If I have to get up and go and switch and whatever, it's like I'm going to miss Hilchos Deos. On the other hand, right?
Wait, so that's you a very... Shirt?
Pardon?
You don't have a shirt in the office? Or like...
Yeah, but hang on. Just run with me here, okay? Right? I'm not looking for solutions to the problem here, right? So I stain my shirt. So that's an interesting question. So I remember specifically having this thought process because I knew we're going to get to Parakeh. Are you allowed to sit at the table and continue? Never mind you learned over the stained shirt. So I decided that since I had just stained my shirt and it wasn't giving off the impression that I'm a slob, I am a slob, but whatever, right? But it wasn't like I woke up and decided to wear a stained shirt. So we finished whatever class we were having and then I went and I, you know, so I have spare shirts in the office because you have to know who you are. And I, you know, I switched my shirt, whatever it is. That's not just the right thing to do. That's just not a nice thing to do. That the Rambam says, this is halacha. You're not allowed to wear a stained shirt. Now, this is dangerous because this means that I think I'm a Talmud Chacham. So I don't know if I'm a Talmud Chacham. I'm not sure that I am a Talmud Chacham. But there's a possibility at least that one of you thinks I'm a Talmud Chacham. So, right? And by the way, you're in that category too. I don't know if you realize that. Like, if you walk out of here and you think I'm a Talmud Chacham, that's a problem. It's as much of a problem as if I walk out of here and think I'm a Talmud Chacham because all of us have seen real Talmud Chacham, right? Okay. But you will meet people who think you're a Talmud Chacham. Absolutely. When you get back to America, you'll meet someone, and you've been, never mind that you went to Yeshiva Days, Yeshiva High School, or at least Yeshiva High School, and that you, or if not Yeshiva Days, Yeshiva High School, you spent a year learning Torah in Israel, and they'll think you're a rabbi. You're like almost rabbinical. So if you walk around with a stained shirt, it's not just, you know, Mikey Snow's wearing a stained shirt. It's, you're not. It's Torah's wearing a stained shirt. Right? So the Rambam feels very strongly about this, right? Okay? So then he goes on, Velo yilbash, lo malbush malachim, kegon bigdei zahav ve'argaman. And you can't wear royal clothing. Now, in his day, I guess there was a certain type of clothing that was royal clothing. In our day, there's a certain type of clothing, it's hard to describe, that you meet a person and he's wearing this clothing and this person's wealthy. You can just see by the way certain people dress, right? So let's say, for example, somebody said to me, you know what, you represent her, I want to buy you an Armani suit. Okay? An Armani suit is, I don't know, from literature I know that this, I wouldn't recognize one if I saw one, but this is supposed to be the suit of suits. Yes, would that be a good, right? And people who know would see a person in such a tailored suit, right? And they would know that he's wearing a serious suit, right? So let's say I decided, you know what, yeshiva and besedesh, I'm going to wear an Armani suit, right? With these beautiful silk, you know, whatever, tailored shirts every day to the yeshiva.
But not a tie.
Pardon? No, even a tie, but I'd find a tie that's comfortable. That'd be unbelievable, right? Okay, right? So that would actually be problematic. Because if after a whole year of being here with you guys and with the Rebbeim, all of a sudden I walk in hatsi-tatsi with my Armani suit, right? So it only takes one person to go, look at him, thinks he's a Rosh Yeshiva, right? Not the way to be. Like, there's a certain way that you can dress that gives off the I am good energy.
I'd say, like, a better example of that might be, like, something like a suit. Like, okay, most people, I don't know, it's like a pretty tough tie to distinguish from a marquee. Something like an ascot, like one of those, like, scarves that you wear. Because that's not, like, a realistic thing to wear. That's, like, something like princes wear.
Okay.
People who are, like, or like golden cufflinks.
Okay,
like,
whatever it might be, right.
I mean, I was just at my great aunt's house, and my great uncle was wearing an ascot on Shabbat instead of.
That's always the risk of saying something.
Well, it doesn't really matter. I think it says something about how far our society has come that we're having difficulty thinking about an example because we're not as separated class-wise by what we wear as we were. But I remember as a kid, right, that there was an African-American. Back then we called them blacks, right? And he was, pardon?
It's back to black.
Oh, it's back to black? Okay. The problem with it being not PC to say a person is black is that it implies that there's a problem with a person being black. Right? That's the problem, right? But we're not going to get into that now. But anyway, I remember there was a fellow, he was running for some sort of city council position, so he was like very much in the media. And he always had a very finely tailored suit. And I remember as a kid noticing it, because when I was a kid, African Americans, blacks, whatever, most of them just didn't dress that way. And I don't think I had attitudes. Like, we had a woman who used to come and clean our house like once or twice a week. She was an amazing lady. And my mother insisted that we all call her Mrs. Berry. She wouldn't let anybody call her. And she would always introduce herself, like on the phone, this is Eloise. My mother wouldn't let any of us call her Eloise. We had to call her Mrs. Berry because she's an adult and you treat her with respect, right? So I learned a lot about that from her. But in any event, you know, I remember thinking this person is dressing, and I could imagine looking back that he had challenges with some people in his community. Because if he's walking down 137th Street in Harlem and hanging with the guys, machshiv tatzmo, you know, look at him. He thinks he's the fancy councilman. In other words, if you're dressing and you're giving off an energy, right, that gives people a negative perception, right, that's off balance. That's what the Rambam's talking about. I think that's less of our issue than the other. Right? Because the other issue is, you know, you meet a guy walks in here, let's say, and I don't know, he's got a torn t-shirt and ripped jeans and thongs with no socks on, right? And there's like a stain on his shirt and a couple of big stains on his pants, whatever it might be, right? So you look at a person like that, there's something off. There's just something off. Now, would I judge the person? Do I know? Maybe this person's a holy soul. Maybe he just came back from a 3-day teyul or whatever. But if a guy came to the Beis Medrash in Oraita, and for a whole day insisted on wearing stained, dirty clothing. And, you know, I don't know if I'd say anything the first day. I'd give him a couple of days. But eventually, like, if a guy insisted on that to the point where we're having discussion, like, what do we do? That's off, right? Yeah?
Would it be better if you wore flip-flops with socks? Because it seems you imply the
ability. I don't know how one wears flip-flops with socks, but if you can do that.
And it implies the ability to be a cohesive footwear player.
Well, I want you to know, on that topic, there are, and we've mentioned this before in modesty, in tzniut, I think it's true also for dress. There are certain areas of dress that are subjective, And there's certain areas of just that are objective, right? I'll give you the extreme example that the Aruch HaShulchan actually brings. If you're visiting Africa, okay, and there's certain areas in Africa where to this day women don't wear top garments. They just don't. They have jewelry and they have no... And I know this because when I was a kid, we got National Geographic, right? And my mother would peruse National Geographic and make sure that there were no appropriate photos for us, whatever, which of course made us go find them in the mailbox. But anyway, so if you're living in that society and everybody's dressing that way, you're not allowed to dress that way. A Jewish woman is not allowed to wear no shirt just because she's living in a society where people are wearing no shirt. But on the other hand, if you're out on the trail and you're in a backpacking society and they don't wear socks, then you don't have a chiyuv to wear socks. There's actually a halachic problem davening without socks. That's a separate issue. But putting that aside, you know, so you have to find the balance between what those things are that are objective and subjective. But that's not my question. My question is, right, because if you're in that society and everybody's dressing that way, right, then, you know, it's not untoward that you're dressing that way. The problem is that people don't wear dirty clothing unless there's something off. If you're in a society where everybody likes to have stains on their clothing, right, it's usually down by the river in cardboard boxes. It's called the homeless group because they can't afford any better, right? Yeah.
So I don't know if this makes sense, but what about with beards? Because I think some people look very distinguished, and if you put effort into maintaining it, like Carl's got a very nice facial hair going on.
Thank you.
But otherwise, if you think you could grow out like a significant religious beard before your time, and you have like splotches, and it just looks very slumpy.
Right. So there's two separate issues there. It's a good question. The area of beards. We're going to get to the whole mitzvah of peyot and beards because a few people ask me. So I thought next month that'd be a good topic for one of our mitzvah classes. But there's two issues with the area of beards. One is the question of halacha. In other words, you do have certain people who believe it's a pretty extreme position, but you could make a case for it that you're not allowed to trim a beard. You're not allowed to cut it at all, whatever it is. That's a very extreme position. Or they do it mitzad chasidus, whatever. I'm not going to get into the halacha questions now. Those people are pretty rare. Most of the people who walk around with what I call, you know, lumberjack gym beards, right? They're either doing it because they think it's like this holy look, or because it implies like we don't care about, you know, our personal, you know, about this world, about the physical, we just want to be spiritual, okay? And I think, and I've had this discussion with at least a couple of people who've, you know, worked for Israelite, I don't think that those people often take into account how that impacts the people that they meet. Like, there was one fellow who was involved with Israelites, and, you know, he was studying one of our leadership training programs, and he's an amazing guy. He's mamash an amazing guy, right? And I had a lot to give. And there's at least one student I can think of who will marry a Jewish girl because of this guy. He's an amazing person. But he had a big, you know, Gesunter beard, right? And he looked like, you know, sort of Gesunter, you know, beard, payas, whatever it is. So we were having this discussion because he was thinking about going into the outreach world. And I said to him, look, you just have to realize, like, if you feel halacha that that's what you have to be, then that's fine. Then that's what you should do because halacha, you think that's right. But if you're doing it because you just happened to become a Baal Tshuva in this yeshiva and that Rebbe happened to have it and you never really thought about it, you should know it's going to limit your options. You know, you show up at, you know, certain universities and you want to talk to a certain type of group of kids and you've got a wall to break through that I don't have to break through, right? And you want to do fundraising, you want to sit with a certain type of donor who's the head of the Reform community in his community, you're going to have a wall to break through that I don't have to break through, right? Never mind sort of the responsibilities of that. So that's a second issue which has to do. But if it's unkempt, like one person's unkempt is not another person's unkempt, but imagine there are crumbs in your beard. Like that'd be an extreme. If you've got crumbs in your beard and you're sitting giving a shear, you need to stop, get up, go to the mirror, and get them out of your beard. Now for me, because I know who I am, that's a good reason not to have a beard, right? Along with the fact that I probably can't grow them. But you get the point, okay? What the Rambam is saying here is, if you're going to be balanced. Be real. You know, if you're sitting here talking about how the Torah gives us balance, but meanwhile you've got this big stain on your shirt, so 50% of what you're trying to share, you can't share because you're not who you're trying to share. Does that make sense? That's what the Rambam's saying, yeah.
Does this royal garb apply to Shabbat also? Because don't like the Sephardim who wear like robes, wasn't that like the elitist dress of the day then? And in Eastern Europe,
that goes back to the balance between sort of, you know, halacha and objective community and personal. In other words, like I wear a suit on Shabbos, And I always, if I can, I wear a suit on Friday night. The only time I don't wear a suit on Shabbat is when, or jacket and tie, is when it's hot. When it gets really hot in the summer, if I get to a point where I think it's interfering with my kavana to wear a jacket and tie, so I'm not going to wear a jacket and tie because my relationship with my davening is more important than whether I'm wearing a jacket and tie. And I don't do it because I think people need to see me as a rav. Like, you guys came to Lev Efrat. I'm not the rav of the shul. I sit in the regular seat, and I quite enjoy that. I don't need to be the rabbi. Not because of anybody else. I feel, you know, that's part of my Shabbat experience. And when I put on a nice, clean, crisp white shirt and a nice suit, and it's been cleaned, I just feel a little special, you know? Like when you go to a business meeting, you'll see, when you went to your interview for college, and you put on a suit, it feels different to wear a suit, right? If you do it every day, so you lose that. In fact, that was one of the things I had a hard time with in America. Because in America, when I was there for 3 years, I wore a suit all the time. You know, I was going to business meetings, whatever. So I felt on Shabbat, like, I didn't have, like, that specialness. So I would try not to have any meetings or classes on Friday, and I would dress down on Friday just so I could dress up again for Shabbat. But, yeah, that's an interesting question. But as balance. But, you know, you can find that thing. The point is, again, just like we said yesterday, that there's a sensitivity to it. You have to be sensitive to this. You have to think about how what you wear affects people's perception of you and affects you. Right? V'lo malbud, v'lo yilbash, lo malbush malachim. Shouldn't wear royal clothes. That everybody looks at that. You know, so now that's an interesting line. Why? Now this is an interpretation, and you don't have to agree with this, but my understanding of the Rambam here is, of the Rambam, why is the Rambam saying you don't wear this type of royal clothing? Because the reason you're wearing this clothing is because everybody looks at it. So now that's interesting. If you're wearing clothing, you know, because it's flashy and you know everybody's going to look at you, there's something off balance with that too, you know. If you don't really like the Lakers, but they have these purple and yellow jumpsuits, and you're going out for a run, and so you buy one because when you wear the purple and yellow jumpsuit, everybody's seeing the man. You know what I mean? There's something a little off with that. On the scale of off, it's not huge, right? But there's a certain sneer, there's a certain modesty. I'm not dressing so everybody will notice me. I'm dressing because I want to be comfortable and because I want to look nice. And, you know, a balance, right? V'lo malbush aniyim, shehu mevazeh lov shav. You shouldn't wear, you know, poor man's clothing because it's denigrating to you. Now, what that means, we could debate. But, you know, just as a sensitivity. Just wear normal middle clothes. Some people have a hard time being normal. Because they're afraid if they're normal, nobody notices them, right? And usually that stems from an issue with self-image. Like if you know you're special, you don't need to dress to be special. You just are special. But if you think you're not special, then maybe if you dress special, people will think you're special, which means there's something off balance. Does that make sense? Yeah? By the way, all these guys wearing these baggy clothes, right? So this is just a theory, and I really could be wrong. But I think a part of that energy is a desire to show that we don't care. There's a certain anti-authority, you know, energy that started that off, yeah?
I think it came from jail originally. Like how in jail, like, they took away their belts or something, so their pants used to always, like...
Oh, really?
...hang low like that, so it's just, like, that almost, like, imitate people in jail.
Why do you want to imitate people in jail? They took away their belts because they're worried about them pointing themselves.
So you want to go to jail, Rob?
So it's anti-authority, on some level, right?
Yeah, okay, right?
And you shouldn't wear clothing where your skin shows a lot. You know, like if you wear a shirt, and you may not notice this, you know, if you have good friends, they'll point this out to you, but if you're wearing a shirt and the shirt is like open halfway down, and you know, your whole, like, you know, I mean, so if you're at the beach, that's fine, but if you're walking around, it's not because of some modesty issue, it's not because, you know, like, obviously, if a woman was doing that, there'd be other issues involved. It's just because it's not balanced. It's not sanua. It's not modest. You know what I mean? That's the Rambam is saying. Right? V'lo yuv gadav schuvin ala aretz kamo bigdeg yasiruach. And your clothes shouldn't drag on the ground, right? Ela adakevo, like, till his ankle. Like, you know, you wear pants that go down to where they're supposed to go down. Uveit yachelo ad roshei etzbotav. And he's giving you sort of balance. V'lo yashalshel talito. So they used to have, like, you see this still with a bride. Like a bride wears a veil and it's a train behind her, right? And that train is royal and people carry it. The only other time I ever saw this, when I was a kid, Prince Charles married Princess Diana. And my mother's English, right? So we all, it was in the summer, we all watched the wedding, you know? She wanted us to see the wedding. And it was quite an affair of pomp and circumstance. And she turned it into this whole, you know, sort of discussion. Or maybe it was Prince Andrew. I don't know, one of the royal weddings. She turned this whole discussion about, is that what really makes a person royal? It was very interesting, and I still remember it. But golden carriages, and she came out, and they were all talking about, you know, this designer designed this piece of clothing and that one, and there's a whole payrush while she's walking. And she's got this long sort of cape, and there are two people carrying the cape so that it won't, God forbid, you know, until she gets to the carpet, right? There's like a royalty to that. Don't go caping around. Like, you don't need, you know what I mean? Like, you ever see these coats where you know, kind of like whatever, and a person puts his coat on and does that, and somebody's like, okay, you know, like, you don't, okay.
Wasn't Princess Diana killed or something?
Pardon? Yes. She died in a terrible accident, which is a shame because she was a balas chesed. Ela b'shabbat bilvad im ein lo lachlif. But you can wear this sort of thing on Shabbat if you have nothing else to wear. V'lo yin'al min alim metulaim tla'e al gabei tla'i b'imot hachama. So a tla'i is a patch. Comes from the skins that they used to use to patch things of the clay. But you ever see sometimes a guy's wearing sneakers and there's so many holes in his sneakers, it's a holy sneaker? So the Rambam was saying, like, that's just not the way to, you know, like, you want balance, whatever, right? Aval bimot akshamim mutar. But look, obviously there's a practical side. If that's what you have to wear and you need it and whatever, then, you know, you're poor. So that's a different story, right? But, you know, some guys like to wear jeans with lots of holes because it looks cool. I don't quite know why that looks cool, but it looks cool. It looks like I don't care about anything. It looks like... So the Rambam, it just looks like you're wearing clothes with holes in it, right? Okay? Yasim bosim b'saro. We'll just finish this halacha. You shouldn't perfume your hair. Aval imashach b'saro b'vosim k'dei lavir tazu ama mutar. So we actually are in a category today called istinis, according to many poskim. Like, for example, the Gemara talks about, you know, that a person doesn't shower every day, but he should at least shower, like, he should at least bathe once a week. So, we don't, like, bathe once a week. If someone shows up here and doesn't bathe but once a week, you know, guys will talk to him about it. We're not used to that, right? And body odor today is considered inappropriate. The body odor that we have a problem with today is nothing compared to the body odor they dealt with back then. Right, that could be, whatever, okay, right? So I didn't have that, but whatever. But if you're perfuming yourself and, you know, whatever it is, you're putting on some cologne, you're putting on some antiperspirant, whatever, because you don't want to smell, whatever, that's normal. But if you're doing it so that you want to walk around, like if a guy walks in every day at the base medrash and you can say, oh, Polo, right? And he's just like, the waft of it comes in with him to the room, so there's a little off balance there too. And basically what I'm saying, like all these things you don't even think about, because they're just, but they give off an energy. You should be balanced. You don't have to stick out. That's what he's saying. Neither do you have to be quiet. You find a healthy and a balanced way to be, right? V'chein lo yetze yechidi balayla, ela im ken ha'el uzman kavu, latzet bo l'talmudo, kol elu mipnei achshad. And this takes us back to what we were talking about before. We'll stop with this. And, you know, the same is true in balance in terms of where you go and how you go. If you're in strange places alone in the middle of the night, you create this perception that other people have that you're off balance. And so the Rambam is basically trying to create this recipe that balance is balance. You know, everything is balanced, then that's really balanced. But if you're balanced in one area and totally off in another, so then you're not really balanced. Yeah.
This might be obvious, but do you think things like walking around while you're eating outside, is that?
Sure, the Rambam talked about that. In other words, the Rambam specifically talks about the shuk. I think there, by the way, that's a very good example of two areas. One is what's objective and what's subjective. And two is sort of a recognition of who you are. You know? Like, I always ask myself, suppose I ran into Rav Lichtenstein, or suppose I ran into Rav Nevinsohn, right? So, if we're out in the Negev, and we're in a teal, and we get, like, one of those sandwiches, whatever, right? So, I'm not going to go sit on the bus, because you don't need a sandwich outside. Like, that would also be off balance. Like, we're all sitting, that's our community, we're eating, right? And if somebody said, you know, we're all ready to go, and I want to finish my sandwich. So, I would like, you remember we did that hike, like, up the, by the Machtesh? So, I would take the half of the sandwich and carry it with me, and then, you know, maybe somewhere sit and eat it, or, you know, take a bite on the way, right? But on the other hand, if I was walking sort of through the Rova, with like, eating a hamburger, right? For me, anyway. And then I ran into, let's say, a couple of students from Dresden Rova, I'd be embarrassed. I guess sitting there eating a hamburger, like, sit down, eat like a man, whatever it might be. But on the other hand, there's a culture, you know, sort of in your generation, that you get a slice of pizza and you eat it on the run. So forgetting the halachic issue of, like, knowing where to make the bracha and if you get up and having in mind, you could do that. I don't personally think that's off. I don't think it's off for someone your age who gets a slice of pizza. Imagine that you get a slice of pizza because you're hungry, but you want to make shiur on time. So you're walking through the rover, you're having the thing, and you have in mind when you eat it, you can make the bracha achron or whatever. That's a debatable halachic question, but let's assume you do that. And, yeah, I don't think that's off. That's just my perception. But you'll get to a point in your life where that'll be off. And you just have to know when that is. That's the challenge.
Would you say the Rambam would say it's us sort of pick your nose in public?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sure. You know, and all those types of things, you know. It's just a question of being conscious of it. Like, there's also a difference between, look, sometimes, let's say a guy's learning, and we all have this experience, and you go over there, and it just so happens that the sinks are blocked, and the toilets are blocked, whatever. So you go off into a corner, and, you know, you get a tissue, you do what you got to do, whatever it might be. Or imagine you're on this teal in the Negev. So you might not want to wait, like, 3 hours before you have a private moment. So fine. But imagine that I'm sitting here, and I'm giving you a shiur, and I just start, you know, doing chafiris. There's something off with that. Right? I had a teacher who taught us math when we were a kid. We used to make fun of it. You know, like, he was just, you know, he would turn around, think nobody was looking in front of the class. He'd be by the board, and he'd be, like, writing, you know. But, like, everybody knew what he was doing. It was off. It was only a matter of time before one time he just forgot. And he's, like, sitting there looking at the book and whatever, and, you know. And he goes, okay, have a good day. Thank you very much. Right. So, yeah, you know, but you don't need, like, you don't need a Gemara. Like, that's the whole point of this. If you need to find the source in the Gemara to tell you it's also to pick your nose, then something's off. It's just understood. But if... Right. But by the way, that would be an example, just so you know, of a subjective cultural reality. Because, for example, when I was in the army, so they teach you certain mores about Bedouin in Jerusalem because you come into contact with them. When you're doing navigations, if you walk by a Bedouin's tent, an open tent, and he invites you in, you have to go in. It's considered a huge insult. They don't usually invite soldiers in, but if they did. And if you sit in a Bedouin tent, right, and they're eating, and you're having your tea because you can't eat anything they're eating, they start to belch. And nobody warned me about this, and I had never seen this before. That's what they do. And it's considered rude if you don't belch. And one of them says, oh, right? Like, you know, it's like a sign that you were satisfied and you appreciate your host. So then I think in a situation like that, it'd be okay to belch. You know? It'd almost be worth taking Rav Lichtenstein to a Bedouin tent just to see what happens. But anyway, okay? All right, let's stop here. Shkayach. Boker Tov. Yeah.
You said we're doing the beginning of the Torah on Chayes Mon.
Yes.